Chapter 13. Hurt People, Hurt People. In this season, finance was now super tight. My husband was living a high life through the work. I was living a high life with Martha and the ponies, away every weekend. Arthur was at a private preparatory school for boys, where he too was thriving. There was more that we wanted to do on the house, more that we wanted in our lives. My husband and I were now shells of our former selves, barely tolerating each other, trying desperately to find a way through. I wanted to downsize and be mortgage-free so we could continue to facilitate and support the children through their schooling and chosen sports codes. He did not want this. He'd worked hard to get where he was and to have what he had. The ponies had to go, and the spending had to stop. We were now ultimately at war. I wanted one thing, and he wanted another. We were now in a stalemate. I'd come to New Zealand to give my children the best opportunities to live their best lives as possible. He was not prepared to sacrifice his beautiful home or image for them or for us. I couldn't have given a stuff about the flash house and the cars. They were meaningless if they weren't being used to facilitate the lifestyle or activities that brought us to joy. And so the abuse began. We fought a lot. Most of it was verbal, some was physical. I distinctly remember when he crossed a line, he said, "You're just like your mother, selfish and don't care about anyone other than yourself." It was like a red rag to a bull. I was so hurt, enraged, and felt backed into a corner. I went for him and scratched his face. I could not believe that the man I had married could be so cruel, so callous, and so controlling. Both of us were in real pain. Hurt people hurt people. I wasn't taking responsibility for my actions. I wanted it my way, and he wouldn't come to the party. And he was the same, blaming and justifying his way of thinking and actions, and I wasn't prepared to come to the party either. The final straw for me was an incident when he held one of our children down on their bed and told them that they were the reason our marriage was a mess. Enough was enough. Our two beautiful, innocent children had nothing to do with our marriage breakup. We had done this to ourselves. We had fallen into the trap of chasing money and status. We were trying to keep up with the wealth around us, doing what we thought would make us happy, successful, whole, and valued. None of this was the children's fault. All our striving had, while having some amazing times, made us more empty on the inside. And where did we dump that misery, frustration, and grief? On each other and our children. But only behind closed doors and out of sight of the world around us. My husband was, and is not, a bad man. He was frustrated, and like me, was at the end of his tether. The violence grew. I was thrown across hallways, and the last time it was across a driveway. I called the police, and I'm so grateful to the copper who stepped out and asked, "Why are you still with this man? Why are you with him and not divorced?" It was the first time anyone had been upfront and honest with me. It was exact wake-up call that I needed at that time. I have a feeling that the policeman got into trouble for this. However, I firmly believe that I needed to hear those words. I can remember exactly where I was standing. It was like the world paused around me while I took a deep breath for the first time and contemplated his question. It was a gift from God, and it made me stop and question myself as well as reflect on what next. Where was the path taking me? The trajectory we were on was destructive. The only way from here was downhill. Something had to drastically change. My husband went off to his family batch in Taupo, which was his happy space, and on the 15th of November 2015, we started legal proceedings to separate. I think one of the hardest times was going through all of the end-of-year school events for my children. Arthur was wrapping up his 5 years at preparatory school and Martha 6 years at primary school. I distinctly remember letting Arthur down. He wanted a family photo with both of his parents. And I just could not stand next to Alexander and smile. My face said it all. I was trying so hard to be brave and put a brave face on when all I really wanted to do was cry and vomit. I so desperately wanted them to be able to wrap things up well. I did my best. This had to be the most torrid time of my life. I had no family here, and most of the people I knew went back to Alexander's school days. He was hurt, and he did everything in his power to make sure I couldn't survive without him. He phoned everyone he knew, and actually everyone I knew, telling him that he was worried about me, and that if they saw me, to report back to him. Not that I knew this at the time. I had numerous messages from him after I had met with someone for coffee. He knew where I'd been and who I had seen. I felt like I was being stalked. I couldn't understand how he knew so much when he was 2 hours away. I didn't know who to trust or what to do next. I was a mess. I was struggling. I had 2 children to look after and I felt very alone and isolated. Those who I thought would stand by me didn't. And those who I didn't even know cared, did. In the words of Charles Dickens, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times. Hanging out my dirty laundry in public took courage, being honest and open about where my life was at. I had to step back from my work at Project K for a few weeks. Our previous regional manager came and stepped in for me. I remember her rocking up and bringing me lunch one day, offering to hold the fort with the mentors and students while I sorted myself out. It was such a relief as I was all over the place, trying to keep all the plates spinning when they were smashing around me. It was time to take responsibility for my own actions. If it was meant to be, then it was up to me. I got myself into this mess. I could get myself out of it. I had failed my commitment to God, in richer and poorer, in sickness and in health. To be honest, that ate away at me more than anything else. I wasn't going to church or hanging out with God in any way, but my conscience was tugging at me. It was such a peculiar time in my life. Things just weren't adding up. I believed in God, but I hadn't acknowledged him or had anything to do with him since leaving school. Even then at school, I was disruptive in chapel and got the giggles. I was not the good girl by any stretch of the imagination. However, there was something deeply rooted in my heart that wherever I was and whatever I was up to, God, my Father, was with me and loved me. And in this season, as with many of my toughest times, I had a sense that there was calm in the storm and that my currently upside-down world would get turned the right way up. I have never known grace and favour like I had in this time. The Project K mentors and students turned up with gardening tools and everything needed to prune the roses and trim the trees and do the bushes and mow the lawns. Working bees were a common thing in the UK. When a big job needed to be done, everyone put a pause on their own lives to help get the job done. I have always felt like this was where the expression "many hands make light work" come from. And that is exactly what I saw that day. I was blown away that they would all give up their Saturday to blitz a garden, flower beds and trees to make it presentable, so that photographs could be taken of the property for its up-and-coming sale. 2 incredible ladies sewed into my heart at this time, scrubbing my house and walls from top to bottom when we moved out. And the pony crew came with horse trucks, strong arms and big hearts to help me move. It was my darkest hour, yet I felt the most loved and cared for. Each one of them sowed love and compassion into my heart at a time when I had nothing to give them in return. The owner of the pony that Martha had the honour of riding offered to pay for everything so that Martha could have something in her life to bring her joy. These were incredible blessings and miracles. When I had nothing to give, they all poured in abundantly, playing their part, giving what they had in their hand. It was a truly incredible time. I kept looking up. I did a letterbox drop, hoping that someone had land in the area that I could afford, and then put a small house on, as I wanted to maintain as much of what I valued as I could. And from that leaflet drop came a small house with a paddock and 3 sheds that we could rent to give us breathing space while we found our feet. Another amazing gentleman, who ran the local boxing club, also offered me some office space so that I could switch off and go to work for my 20 hours a week. No charge. This was an incredible blessing, as working from home at this time was soul-destroying. The house felt empty, and being there 24/7 didn't give me a break from the grief. Having an office to work in allowed me to have some space and find some respite, and it enabled me to keep my job and actually do some great work. A huge thank you to all those who covered and poured love into me at this time. It is thanks to each and every one of you that I am here today, living my best life. You were there when I needed you most. You stood in the gap for me. I remember visiting and speaking to the parents of Arthur's best mates, asking them that whatever happened between Alexander and me, would they still welcome Arthur at their home at this time with their boys? They were outstanding, and the three boys are still best buddies now, all in the South Island, carving very different paths, but living their dreams. One of the most challenging moments was plucking up the courage early on to visit Alexander's parents. I knew there was no way I'd be able to afford the children's school fees. I didn't know how long my separated husband would be able to hold his job for either. I wanted to ask if there was any way that they would support their grandchildren through their schooling, as it was that their family line, and they were already supporting other grandchildren. I knocked on the door and was invited into their home, and then was spoken at. I have never seen such hatred in someone's eyes as I did that day in Alexander's father. He pointed a finger at me and said, "You are the problem. You are the reason my son is in this state." I had no perceptions or understanding of how much baggage they were carrying and how this was hurting them. I remember being uncharacteristically calm and saying, "I'm sorry that you don't have eyes to see and ears to hear. I bid you good day," and left. The whole experience was surreal. I had not gone to beg. I had hoped to reason to appeal to their hearts. I was emotionless, which for anyone who knows me would have been completely out of character, even more so under the circumstances. I believe I was covered by the Holy Spirit that day. The words I spoke were his, not mine. It wasn't until years later I saw the exact same words in the Bible. Reflect and reframe. We all have pivotal moments in our lives. This was certainly one of mine. I had to take responsibility and get on with my life. Blaming others, circumstances, or feeling sorry for myself were not going to help me, and I was not going to be able to move forward. I had created this mess. It was down to me, and to get myself out of it. If it's meant to be, it's up to me. I was on my own again, and if others could do this, so could I. All things are possible to those who believe. The key here is the responsibility triangle that Lynette Breen shared with me way back when I first coached with her. There was no time to waste blaming my ex-husband or justifying my actions. It was time for this Yorkshire lass to dig deep and get real. We can choose connection or disconnection. We can choose to love or hurt. Out of our heart, our mouth speaks, and our tongue is like a double-edged sword. We can build up or we can break down with our words. I'm reminded of the story of the nails in the fence, the author unknown. I'm not sure who the author is, but the Nails in the Fence story packs quite a punch. It's an impactful story that I recommend teachers share with their students. It will help kids of any age to see the damage they cause if they lose control of their emotions. There once was a little boy who had a bad temper. His father gave him a bag of nails and told him that every time he lost his temper, he must hammer a nail into the fence. The first day, the boy had driven 37 nails into the fence. Over the next few weeks, as he learned to control his anger, the number of nails hammered daily gradually dwindled down. He discovered it was easier to hold his temper than to drive those nails into the fence. Finally, the day came when the boy didn't lose his temper at all. He told his father about it, and the father suggested that the boy now pull out one nail for each day that he was able to hold his temper. The days passed, and the young boy was finally able to tell his father that all the nails were gone. The father took his son by the hand and led him to the fence. He said, "You have done very well, my son, but look at the holes in the fence. The fence will never be the same. When you say things in anger, they leave a scar, just like this one. You can put a knife in a man and draw it out. It won't matter how many times you say I'm sorry, the wound is still there." The little boy then understood how powerful his words were. He looked up his father and said, "I hope you can forgive me, father, for the holes I put in you." "Of course I can," said the father, unknown. Dear reader, for the word of God is living and active, sharper than any double-edged sword. It penetrates even a dividing soul and spirit, joints and marrow. It judges the thoughts and attitudes of the heart. Hebrews 4:12 NIV. Words have power. Just as with the example above about the nails in the fence, we have all been on the receiving end of someone's unkind words, and we have probably spoken some unkind words ourselves. This chapter shows me at my worst. I encourage you today to consider some of the words that have been spoken over you that have been unkind or hurtful. Consider how they made you feel and the outcome to these words. If they made you feel less than or made you pull back and withdraw, I encourage you to write them down and put them in your God box or tissue box. Ask God for the exchange as shared in chapter 2. I also encourage you to consider all the words that you say over yourself or have said over others. Follow the same process as above and exchange the old unhelpful words for new helpful ones. It is time to leave the old behind, that which doesn't serve you or belong to you. Leave it behind and move freely into the new, amazing, loving, kind and caring you. In both of the above suggestions, write down the helpful, uplifting exchange and focus on that. As you highlight that in your brain, the unhelpful will fade away naturally until it no longer hurts or exists. Love conquers all, and it really does. The new you focuses on the good, not the bad. I encourage you to consider all the uplifting, empowering, kind, inspiring words that have been spoken over you by others or yourself. Claim them as your inheritance. Have fun with this. It's time for you to be the amazing, uniquely designed, brilliant person that you have always been and called to be. Call to adventure. Finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. Philippians 4:8 NIV. Most people are unaware of the power of their words and the impact and implications that they can have. I have an exercise I do with many of my clients around the link between words, emotions, and outcomes. I invite you to consider your words, emotions, and actions. For each point in the following exercise, I'd like you to write down these things in this order. What did they say? How did it make you feel? And what was the outcome? Number one, think of a time when someone has said something negative, rude, or unkind to you. What did they say? How did it make you feel? And what was the outcome? Number two, now think of when someone has said something positive, encouraging or kind to you. What did they say? How did it make you feel? And what was the outcome? Three, think of a time when you have said something negative or unhelpful or unkind to yourself. What did you say? How did it make you feel? And what was the outcome? And number four, think of a time when you have said something positive, encouraging, or kind to yourself. What did you say? How did it make you feel? And what was the outcome? For me, this is black and white, good or bad. One has his signature all over it, making you feel connected, loved, chosen, valued, seen, heard, and honoured. The other has the enemy's signature all over it, making you feel disconnected, unloved, like no one cares, undervalued, ignored, alone, and maybe dishonoured. While there are some in life who do not believe in God or have not met him yet, many would agree that there is good and bad in the world. Many would agree that there is a moral code of conduct that comes from our spirit, otherwise known as our conscience. I have been threading scripture through this book not to condemn you, but to open your eyes to a whole new world of wisdom and insight. Of all the self-help books I have read, of all the courses I have been on, nothing compares to finding your true North Star. Nothing compares to choosing words of love rather than words of hate. I have found the Bible, and knowing the heart of His word has transformed my life and given me an inspiring perspective. For those of you who have a Bible at home or are curious, have a look at Proverbs and the book of John. I found this was the best place to start for me to get my head around some of this stuff. I really started to understand how and who we are as human beings. These small sections within this book fired me up to learn more and to know more. Enjoy. A good man brings good things out of good stored up in his heart, and an evil man brings evil things out of the evil stored up in his heart. For the mouth speaks what the heart is full of. Luke 6:45, NIV.